was a quiet group that watched the powered launch move downriver at sunset. Even from 2 kilometers away, the consul could see the blue skins of the crew. The Benares looked old and abandoned at its wharf, already a part of the deserted city. When the launch was lost in the distance, the group turned to watch the sea of grass. Long shadows from the river bluffs crept out across what the consul already found himself thinking of as the surf and shallows. Farther out, the sea seemed to shift in color, the grass mellowing to an aquamarine shimmer before darkening to a hint of verdurous depths. The lapis sky melted into the reds and golds of sunset, illuminating their hilltop and setting the pilgrim skins aglow with liquid light. The only sound was the whisper of wind in grass.
"We've got a fucking huge heap of baggage,"
Martin Silenus said loudly.
"For a bunch of folks on a one-way trip."
It was true, thought the consul. Their luggage made a small mountain on the grassy hilltop.
"Somewhere in there,"
came the quiet voice of Het Mastin,
"may lie our salvation."
"What do you mean?"
"Yeah,"
said Martin Silenus, lying back, putting his hands under his head and staring at the sky.
"Did you bring a pair of undershorts that are shrike-proof?"
The Templar shook his head slowly. The sudden twilight cast his face in shadow under the cowl of the robe.
"Let us not trivialize or dissemble. It is time to admit that each of us has brought on this pilgrimage something which he or she hopes will alter the inevitable outcome when the moment arrives that we must face the Lord of Pain."
The poet laughed.
"I didn't even bring my lucky fucking rabbit's foot."
The Templar's hood moved slightly.
"But your manuscript, perhaps?"
The poet said nothing. Het Mastin moved his invisible gaze to the tall man on his left.
"And you, Colonel, there are several trunks which bear your name. Weapons, perhaps?"
Kassad raised his head but did not speak.
"Of course. It would be foolish to go hunting without a weapon."
"What about me?"
asked Braun Lamia, folding her arms.
"Do you know what secret weapon I've smuggled along?"
The Templar's oddly accented voice was calm.
"We have not yet heard your tale, M. Lamia. It would be premature to speculate."
"What about the consul?"
"Oh, yes. It is obvious what weapon our diplomatic friend has in store."
The consul turned from his contemplation of the sunset.
"I brought only some clothes and 2 books to read,"
he said truthfully.
"Ah,"
sighed the Templar.
"But what a beautiful spacecraft you left behind."
Martin Silenus jumped to his feet.
"The fucking ship! You can call it, can't you? Well, goddammit, get your dog whistle out! I'm tired of sitting here!"
The consul pulled a strand of grass and stripped it. After a minute, he said,
"Even if I could call it, and you heard Abetic say that the commsats and repeater stations were down, even if I could call it, we couldn't land north of the Bridal Range. That meant instant disaster even before the Shrike began ranging south of the mountains."
"Yeah,"
said Silenus, waving his arms in agitation.
"But we could get across this fucking lawn. Call the ship!"
"Wait until morning. If the wind wagon's not here, we will discuss alternatives."
"Fuck that,"
began the poet. But Kassad stepped forward, with his back to him, effectively removing Silenus from the circle.
"Emmestine, what is your secret?"
There was enough light from the dying sky to show a slight smile on the Templar's thin lips. He gestured toward the mound of baggage.
"As you see, my trunk is the heaviest and most mysterious of all."
"It's a Mobius cube," said Father Hoyt. "I've seen ancient artifacts transported that way."
"Or fusion bombs,"
said Kassad. Het Mastin shook his head.
"Nothing so crude."
"Are you going to tell us?"
"When it is my turn to speak."
"Are you next?"
asked the consul.
"We can listen while we wait."
Saul Weintraub cleared his throat.
I have number 4,
he said, showing the slip of paper.
But I would be more than pleased to trade with the true voice of the tree.
Weintraub lifted Rachel from his left shoulder to his right, patting her gently on the back. Hetmastine shook his head.
No, there is time. I meant only to point out that in hopelessness there is always hope. We have learned much from the story so far, yet each of us has some seed of promise buried even deeper than we have admitted.
I don't see, began Father Hoyt, but was interrupted by Martin Silenus's sudden shout.
It's the wagon, the fucking wind wagon, here at last.